Welcome to the What Matters Today podcast from the Geneva Graduate Institute. I'm Dan Graham, Head of Communications at the Institute. In this podcast series, we ask members of our faculty to comment on key global issues. In this episode, we mark the first year of the Nagulendran Chair in Peace Mediation with a wide-ranging conversation on the state of peace diplomacy today. At a time when conflicts are multiplying across the globe, we ask whether this signals a failure of diplomacy or a call for its evolution. We explore how the peace diplomacy sector works, who its actors are, the roles they play, and how they differ. We also examine the mounting pressure of budget cuts and political change and consider how these challenges are reshaping the field's future. This conversation offers both a moment of stock-taking and forward-looking vision on how peace diplomacy can remain resilient, relevant, and transformative in uncertain times. My guest today is Akim Venman, Director for Strategic Partnerships here at the Geneva Graduate Institute, Professor of Practice in the Interdisciplinary Program, and Nagulendran Chair in Peace Mediation. Akim, thank you very much for joining us for this episode of What Matters Today. It's the first time we've had you as a guest, and I hope not the last. You're here to discuss peace mediation. As you mark your first year as the Nagulendran Chair in Peace Mediation, a natural moment to take stock of the state of mediation practice, how should we understand the growing number of conflicts around the world today? Does it suggest that peace diplomacy is failing, or that it needs to evolve to meet new realities?
When we're looking at the current state of conflict and war, I think it would be a big mistake to use this as an excuse to brandish mediation and conflict resolution as a failure. This is because conflict and war are a result of deliberate political decisions. And it is these deliberate decisions that are a problem, but not the fact that conflict resolution strategies do not work. So if I look back at my first year, I see a sector that has a tremendous energy and that has mobilized energies to prevent even further harm that I think no other sector could have mobilized. Because while we see a lot of war, suffering, and destruction daily on our television screens, I know from the work that I see behind the scenes that it could have been even much worse.
Could you demystify the peace diplomacy sector? Who is it? What does it do? And how are actors different?
So I like that you asked the question around demystification, because peace diplomacy and the mediation of peace agreement happens primarily behind the scenes, very discreetly, and very frequently also in secret. So demystification is the right angle. Now, who does it? There are several states who are currently leading on discrete processes. We've seen a lot, for instance, with the Egyptian-Qatari facilitation, with the release of hostages in Gaza and the return of prisoners. But what we have to understand, each of these processes involves multiple dozens of actors that do different bits and pieces of the puzzle. So you have governments, and particularly foreign ministries, secret services, and presidential administrations, who are involved at the sometimes the visible end of the negotiations. But then you have also other actors who have very special expertise, who are involved in providing technical assistance, or that happen to be those individuals that have primary relationship with some of the most difficult actors, actors who work in the so-called private diplomacy field. Many of these actors are here in Geneva, actors such as Geneva Call, the Center for Humanitarian Dialogue, also Interpeace. What makes these actors special is that they have a unique understanding of very granular dynamics of conflict in specific settings, and that they have the access to the individuals and groups that shape the conflict dynamics. So these are between states, between the non-governmental sector. I would say these are about three dozens of actors who are shaping this. Among states, you have countries like Qatar that have been a lot in the media now, but also many more traditional actors, including Switzerland, Norway, Of course, the Vatican has been involved in this issue for many years, and actors like Finland, Germany, the Netherlands, but also countries like Oman, for instance. And there are, on the NGO side, there are about 27 actors who are engaged in this sector, partly because many of the spaces necessary for engagement cannot be reached by states alone. So they need other actors to access these spaces, but also these individuals. But I think one of the least regarded actors in this are movements. So don't forget, I mentioned the Vatican already, church movement represent a global network of contacts that represent an understanding of very local realities, which are very special. We have also here in Geneva the Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, which offer a tremendous network all over the world, which represents one very important realization to understand, to demystify mediation in a war to peace transition, which is that the state-focused lens is only one lens of looking at peace and conflict dynamics. There are many other lenses at the community level, at the city level, at regional levels, where it is so important to realize that there are many actors who are working in this space. Now, of course, there is the United Nations. Traditionally, particularly 30 years ago, after the end of the Cold War, the United Nations has played a very important role to address the overhang of civil wars from the Cold War. And so a lot of important peace agreements from Namibia to Cambodia to South Africa have been facilitated by senior UN facilitators. This has happened then because major powers have given the United Nations the license to operate in this work. And this is currently the problem to understand why the UN is not so much involved, because that agreement among UN member states to give the organization a license to operate to resolve conflict is not there. The Security Council is blocked. There are lots of diverging interests with respect to different conflict zones around the world. And this explains why the United Nations is less actively seen. Of course, we know behind the scenes, the UN remains very, very active. And ultimately, it also remains very relevant because it remains the only forum of membership of all member states. And it remains the only forum in which states can exert peer pressure on other states in order to act less violently.
And how can we understand the pressures on the sector in this moment of drastic budget cuts and political change?
So I think money is one issue, but it is in the peace sector, not necessarily the defining issue. The budget situations of most actors in the mediation field reveal that there is, in fact, not such a big downturn. There is a downturn in some organizations, but recall that many peace organizations do not accept funding from the United States of America. So this has isolated most non-governmental peace actors, but those who are not registered in the U.S., from large budget cuts from that country. More impactful were budget cuts 3 years ago that happened in Germany, in the Netherlands, and in other European countries, as part of a decision in these countries to redirect funding from different sectors into the rearming of Europe to prioritize its positioning with respect to Ukraine and the Ukraine-Russia war. So that is one effect. So financing is an important element, but it is not similar to the fact like in the health sector or the humanitarian sector. What is more fundamentally a problem is that you have a type of politics that is advanced in some countries that is based of enmity, fear, and distance. And that is a type of politics that frowns upon actors that are trying to create harmony, good relations, and that are trying to bridge differences between opposed parties. Because that type of politics is all about polarization and creating enemies and nurturing enmity. This type of politics is a specific threat and problem for a sector like the mediation sector that, in fact, tries to deconstruct enmity. We've seen this in already some news targeting of some private diplomacy organizations. We've seen it also with some work of terrorist organizations that as they wanted to polarize their own specific environment, they were the first to go after those who would be, in fact, facilitators of difference in their respective environments. But the real pressure out there is that there are no instruments that have been tested out by the Trump administration to pressure organizations. We've seen with the International Criminal Court, the use of sanctions on an international organizations, which had a significant impact on the way that the organization worked. We have seen, as you rightly mentioned, the financial dimension. And so the sector needs to navigate this extremely carefully in order to see how it can assure that it can be seen as providing practically and programmatically relevant products that are equally important across the entire spectrum of global politics.
And given the challenges and threats you just mentioned, how does the sector adapt? What are the pathways for the sector's evolution?
So one thing is very clear. There is enough work for the sector and for everyone in it, because there are not just over 60 international armed conflicts. There are also many different types of violent situations that the sector can embrace. I think one very important pathway is among the different actors who are engaged in mediation and conflict resolution is to negotiate a better division of labor of who does what. At the moment, there is a lot of hype around the facilitation and crisis management activities of the government of Qatar, who has done a phenomenal job with relatively few resources, but that has also tried out a new type of mediation, which is crisis management and conflict mediation together with financial incentives, which means we help resolve your conflict, but we also put on the table $5 billion for your reconstruction. This is a new model in mediation, which Switzerland, Norway, and other countries have never put on the table, where the approach has been much more, we are a third-party facilitator. When the parties to the conflict come and knock on our doorsteps, that we are the right facilitator and a third party. So very different. And I think there is still a lot of market for different approaches of mediation and dispute resolution out there, but there is a need to negotiate who does what. Because what Switzerland has, of course, built up over the last 30 years in terms of mediation support capacity is still something that is unique. It is institutionalized mediation support capacity across a whole range of topics, from the specific issues on water peace diplomacy to economic dimensions in peace mediation, to, of course, how to construct inclusive processes, how to deal with justice issues in water peace transition. All of this know-how is associated to Western mediation support activities over the last 30 years. Now, that capability is open to be infused in many different types of situations. I have worked a lot on the introduction of mediation knowledge and expertise at the city level. Because many people die in cities, there is a lot of urban and also criminal violence that happens in large urban areas. And sometimes these go completely under the radar. They are not part of the public imagination. This is the violence that happens in Mexican cities, in Colombian cities, or in Brazil, or in different towns from Cape Town and also to cities in Asia. But they are currently not part of the relatively state-focused way of working of the mediation sector. There is one very peculiar asset of the mediation world that deserves particular attention. This is their trusted access to leaders of armed formation or to military establishments, and therefore the real source of assessment of peace and conflict dynamics. And again, this is an asset that would allow the sector to act as a bulwark against disinformation and misinformation. what the sector has to be better at is to translate and to make this knowledge come up to decision-making circles so that it helps decision makers to be able to separate of what is disinformation about a specific conflict setting and what is the real appreciation of the parties involved in the conflict of how they see the opportunities for continued fighting or for going into peace negotiations. I would also say there is one additional pathway which is open. If we are thinking of the diversity of conflict dynamics which are involved, which is the recognition that even in the worst situations, there is agency for peace. And it is not always in the spaces that we imagine them to be. I've been recently in Buenaventura, a very important port city in Colombia that manages most of Colombia's export. It is a city that is Colombia's relationship to the globalized economy, but it is also a city where a significant part of the population is very marginalized and where different gangs have essentially robbed a significant proportion of young people as forced recruitment for the different gangs and militias that operate in Colombia. And the energy that I've seen on the mothers of disappeared youth, the energy that they invest to find their children back and wanting to wish to construct a different type of social reality in the places where they live is unbeatable. This is the energy for peace that you have to find and look for, but it exists in even the most difficult areas. So when one asks, where are the peacemakers? The peacemakers are exactly there. The peacemakers are with those who know the consequences of violence and peace, of violence and suffering, and who are willing to stand up with courage in order to find pathways for peace. Because they know how difficult and painful the continuation of war is.
Thank you for that. And here's the final question. As a professor, what do you think are the most important elements to teach and train the future generation of professionals in the field of peace diplomacy?
So in my own teaching, I always prioritize the portrayal of the real dynamics in the mediation sector, what the real practice is like. Unfortunately, today, the practice is very heavy on seniority. That means some of the most important mediation and facilitation roles are conducted by individuals that are very senior and also still primarily male. However, what I also see in the practice and what I mentioned to my students is there is no better preparation than to be trained in solid conflict analysis, political economy research, and the analysis of armed actors. There are framings, there are tools to do this. Being a very good conflict analyst is one of the best foundations to enter into this field. But there's something more, because peace mediation and conflict resolution is ultimately a human exercise. It is about the shaping of transferable skills, of social skills, of the ability to put yourself into the other's shoes that are very, very important personal characteristics in order to get into this sector. Reading people, being able to survive difficult conversation, pressure, also being able to know yourself, how you change under pressure is something extremely important. So knowing your own psychology, knowing yourself is a critical ingredient to work in this field. And as an analyst, having the right conceptual tools at your disposal that you can use in order to analyze situation is something extremely important. What makes me very hopeful for the future of the sector is, as a professor, I see extremely good talent that is ready, that wants to invest his or her professional life into the sector. And if you ask me, if you gauge the healthiness of a sector, it is always a good sign that there is a very good cohort of motivated and extremely qualified young people that is willing to invest itself into the continuation of the search for peace and the reduction of violence.
Hey, Kim, thank you very much again for joining us on this episode of What Matters Today.
Thank you so much.
This podcast series is produced by the Geneva Graduate Institute Communications Team. For more information about the Institute, please visit our website at graduateinstitute.ch. I'm Dan Graham. Thanks for listening.